Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Know, not having been there and not seeing all the facts, what role race played in that. But I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly in arresting somebody when there was already proof that they were in their own home. And number three, what I think we know, separate and apart from this incident, is that there is a long history in this country of African Americans.
Up right there. First of all, you all heard about this by now, and we are all asking a few questions. And we're going to read the police report on the Savage Nation and let you decide. I was not there. Obama was not there, but he took the side of his friend, Henry Louis Gates Jr., and I was not there, and I'm going to take the side of the white police officer. Okay, let's go into this with our biases. Let's go into this with our biases exposed. Now, the reason I'm taking the side of this officer is because, number one, I'm aware of the game that guys like Henry Gates Jr. have been playing their whole life. I am a victim of the guys like Henry Gates Jr., second and third rate scholars who got to the top of the heap simply based upon race and screaming race in a crowded nation. So I'm not on his side. That's number one. And for Obama to start talking now about minorities are detained disproportionately to whites, is Obama implying he's a victim too? Is Obama implying he's also a victim? Is he going to continue to play that game? I know that Henry, I know he got very far. So far in his life using that card, the race card, make no mistake about it, we have a president that has played the race card from day one. That's why he's president. But that doesn't mean he's going to get away with it now in this case. I have before you the police report. And the reason I'm going to read it is because the Boston newspapers have dropped it from their website. And the reason they dropped it from the website is because it makes Henry Louis Gates Jr. look like a damn ass. A troublemaking man. And so we'll read that in the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the Sergeant James Crowley of the Cambridge Police, who refuses to apologize. He's the officer who arrested Harvard Prof. Henry Gates. And the fact of the matter is, for the president to say that the cops acted stupidly and then have his flack later on say that the cops didn't act stupidly, when even Bill Cosby is coming out and saying he's shocked at Obama's statement, is pretty much revealing. Fact of the matter is, there should be no criticism of the Cambridge police. We have the full arrest report. You'll listen to it, and you will decide whether it's Gates Jr. who should be apologizing or the police officer who should be apologizing. With regard to my own case, I'm going to insert something right here. I just learned minutes ago that Saturday night in England, actually it'll be Sunday morning, in England and very late Saturday night here, a major London newspaper is going to be releasing a major new blockbuster story. It's going to set the world on its axis. I'm telling you right now what we found in that discovery report about who, what, when in the English government did this to me and why they singled me out, who else may be on the list, and why O'Reilly, Hannity, and Limbaugh are going to have egg all over their face, in my opinion. It's all going to come out over the weekend. So be very, very pay close attention to MichaelSavage.com, because we're going to link the story up the minute it comes out. I don't think I'm going to sleep that night. And you're going to see that I am an innocent man. You're going to see that you should have been on my side. You're going to see this as a liberal issue as much as a conservative issue. You're going to see that the Gordon Brown administration in the office of Jackie Smith was a fascist cell operating within a labor government. You heard me. A fascist cell operating within a labor government. There's good news. The good news is that Obama's socialist juggernaut has been stopped. It's dead in the water. Harry Reid announced today that he does not have the votes in the Senate to go forward, and they are going to hold off on the health care vote in the Senate until the fall. The Obama juggernaut has been stopped. The dreadnought is dead in the water. The engines are not running. It's over. Because the longer we the people have, to read the report, the more graft and corruption we are going to find within it. And consequently, Obama's juggernaut, his dreadnought, the SS Obama, is dead in the water right now. And I think that this is very good for you to know. Very important for you to know that Obama is not infallible. You understand what I just said to you? This guy's been acting as though he's an emperor. He could do no wrong. And he's going to jam this agenda down our throats, whether we like it or not, with a little help from his friend Rahm Emanuel and whatever that guy's name is from New York. That guy with the mustache who I always forget. Because he reminds me. I know who it is. He reminds me of a guy my father knew who raised money for the UJA, who made my flesh crawl, okay? I don't remember him by any other name. And speaking of the UJA, have you heard the story about the rabbis involved in the money laundering in New Jersey? Oh, my God. And Orthodox Jews, no less. Now, this is not to say all Orthodox Jews are involved in rackets, but let me tell you something. We've seen enough of the reverends and preachers marched in over the years with the scamming and the hookers and this and that. Well, guess what? What goes around comes around, and a graft and corruption not limited to any religion. And there are no religions that are above the law. And to use your religion while scamming for the mafia is a double insult to God. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to hide the guilt underneath your pelt, then you should get a double dose of jail, as far as I'm concerned. If you use your pelt to hide your guilt, then you really got to understand that the people are going to be doubly angry at you. Do you understand this or not? I hope you do, because we're going to talk about that. To buy organs in Israel for $10,000 and sell them for $160,000, can you believe this? Can you believe this? They paid some poor immigrants in Israel $10,000 for an organ, and then they smuggled them into the U.S. with false paperwork saying they were relatives of the recipient, and they charged the recipient $160,000, which, by the way, the recipient probably wasn't paying. I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it was Medicare, Medicaid that was paying for it. I guarantee it was Uncle Schmuck paying for it. As sure as I'm sitting here, it was Uncle Schmuck paying for the $160,000 for the kidney. And they did it in ways that were biblical in proportion of the corruption and greed. So as I say, look, you got to look this in the eye. You say, well, what does it have to do with rabbis? Nothing. It has to do with these rabbis. You understand? It has to do with these rabbis, and I'm not going to go light on them. I'm going to go heavier on them. They're going to get a double dollop of my contempt, a double. It's bad enough when somebody who's not religious does a thing like this. You understand? And if they hide the guilt beneath the pelt, well, let me tell you something. We're going to talk about it. We're all going to yelp, because that's the way it should be. We the people. Okay, God must know they steal the dough. Not all Jews are simple schmoes. They bend the knee to the Almighty, and at night they laugh, tee-hee. That's a little couplet I wrote for myself today. God must know they steal the dough. Not all Jews are simple schmoes. They bend the knee to the Almighty, and at night they laugh, tee-hee. Organ? What organ? I don't know about the organ. I don't go in the church, so what do I know about an organ? Organ is in church. We don't know what's... We don't go in church. Church is with organs. Sir, we are talking about kidneys, organs. I told you I don't know from organ. I don't know organ. Organ is in the church. What do you want from me in an organ? I just know that the defense attorney is going to talk about the Holocaust. The defense attorney is going to talk about how they're oppressed. The defense attorney is not going to talk about the case and the corruption. They're going to try and turn the argument the same way that Obama is a jive artist who tried already... Talk about Henry Louis Gates Jr. was picked on, and that all minorities are detained disproportionately. That's because they commit more crimes. What do you mean they're detained disproportionately? That's like saying that talking about immigrants is racist because most of them are not white. Oh, well, then I guess we shouldn't talk about illegal immigration because we're liable to be racist. Yeah, sure, I'll stop talking about it. Yeah, I'll stop talking about it. If 100% of the illegal immigrants, or let's say 99.9% of illegal immigrants are not white, and you're talking about them, can you be accused of racism? Sure, if you're Obama. And if you're the Democrats trying to screw the American people, you can use the race card. The same way he used this jive lie that we must recognize the minorities are detained disproportionately to whites. Sure, it's a fact, because minorities commit more crimes disproportionate to their race than do whites. That's a fact also, Mr. Obama. And race is a factor in the U.S. This cannot be conceived as racism, except by Obama, who's used it all his life to get where he is. And so, therefore, we are going to read the narrative on Thursday, July 16, 2009. Henry Gates Jr. of Ware Street, Cambridge, Mass., was placed under arrest after being observed exhibiting loud and tumultuous behavior in a public place, directed at a uniformed police officer who was present investigating a report of a crime in progress. These actions on behalf of Gates, that's the black professor, served no legitimate purpose and caused citizens passing by this location to stop and take notice while appearing surprised and alarmed. Now, the important thing for you to know is that the police officer who conducted the arrest gave Gates several opportunities to stop his aggressive behavior. You should also know that the police officer involved in this actually teaches classes on how to avoid racial profiling. Therefore, Obama is wrong. I'll be right back. Savage. Hide the gelt beneath the pelt. Makes me sick, makes me sick, makes me sick, you know. God must know they steal the dough. Not all Jews are simple schmoes. Bend the knee to the Almighty, and at night they laugh, tee-hee. Do they hide the gelt beneath the kelt? Gives new meaning to the phrase, people of the crook. Making friends one day at a time here on the Savage Nation. Now, I have a question for you. In England, I was banned, they said, because if I were to speak there, I would create inter-community tension. Let me ask you something. Do you think Henry Louis Gates Jr. just created inter-community tension? Don't you think Obama just stimulated inter-community tension with his comment that the cop is stupid? And don't you think that the rabbis who traded in kidney donations and money laundering themselves created inter-community tension, not me commenting upon it? So you see how absurd it is to say that a commentator can't comment on things because he's going to stir up inter-community tension. I would say it's the people committing the acts that we are commenting upon that are creating inter-community tension. You get it? Okay. Sheila, New York, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I would like to comment on the corruption charges against the Jews in New Jersey.
Go ahead.
As an observant Jew myself, I'm ashamed. I can't even explain to you what I felt when I saw the news this morning. You know, we have a saying in Judaism, it's called Derech Eretz Kadma LeTorah. It means that the law of the land is equivalent to the Torah. And if Jews are not afraid of the law of the land, then they're certainly not afraid of God. And it goes both ways. And I just feel like...
You're a very wise person. You're a very wise person. And you are a good person. You are a true rabbi. You are a true teacher. You should be teaching the rabbi. He shouldn't be teaching you, Sheila.
And I'm so upset about this. It's just awful. You know, like, they're supposed to be, we're constantly scrutinized, everything that we do. And something...
Sheila, here's the thing to remember. You got to tend your own garden. You got to do the right thing by yourself. As I say, you are a wise person. Don't, in other words, yes, it's okay to feel humiliated and shamed by what they did to the image of your community, but you didn't do what they did, okay?
Of course, I understand.
Take pleasure in the fact that you know right from wrong. Mark in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I have an acquaintance whose dad is actually here today, 7 years later, because believe it or not, he got a kidney from one of them, and he actually paid for it himself. With a lot of money, he paid for the whole thing, but he's actually sitting around. But my main point, my question was, what exactly is that bothering so much? Is it that they bought something for $10,000 and sold it for $160,000? Was it that they were selling a live organ that is illegal? What exactly is what
they... Let me explain to you that these organs are gotten from people under false pretenses, number one. Now, notice they were getting the organs from people in Israel. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So who in Israel would donate an organ? Would it be somebody who owns an aircraft factory? Would it be somebody who owns the Mercedes dealership in Tel Aviv? Would it be a Jewish nightclub owner who would donate a kidney? It would be the poorest of the poor, probably an immigrant from Yemen, an immigrant from somewhere who didn't have a pot to pee in, who was told that he'll get a fortune, $10,000, God knows how many shekels that is, if only he'll cut out a kidney and he can still live on another kidney. So the ethical problem here is to encourage poor people to donate organs for money. Now, this is not the first community it has occurred in. It's been occurring in India for a very long time. It's been occurring in China for a very long time, where the Chinese take the organs from people that they execute for political crimes. You know that as well, Mark. But for this to be coming out of the Jewish community in Israel is the new shocker here.
I agree with you regarding the ethical, and you're trying to be a nice guy and save people's lives, give it away at a better price. But what's the legal issue over here with the FBI talking about, they said, 10 years of probing into? What was the commotion, the legal part right now in our system?
Well, what I'm saying is this, Mark, it looks to me like there's more involved than organ sales. It looks like there's money laundering. It looks like there's other issues involved than simply money laundering over kidneys. But the kidneys themselves present a major ethical question. If you encourage poor people to have a kidney cut out of their body for money, what you're doing is killing the man in half, 50% of the man. You're killing 50% of the man for a dollar. You're exploiting his poverty. That's the issue. It's ethically wrong. It's religiously wrong. It's financially wrong. It's wrong on every level. That's the point. 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back to read the police report on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Race remains a factor in the society. That doesn't lessen the incredible progress that has been made. I am standing here as testimony to the progress that's been made. And yet, the fact of the matter is that, you know, this still haunts us. And even when there are honest misunderstandings, the fact that blacks and Hispanics are picked up more frequently and oftentimes for no cause, casts suspicion even when there is good cause.
Yeah, keep up the double talk, Obama. Get another cop killed. You know, in Oakland last, if you recall, last spring, four cops were killed because of rhetoric like this coming out of Obama's yap. Every time a cop approaches a minority now, they have to think twice before they can pull a gun for fear that a Henry Louis Gates Jr. or an Al Sharpton or now the president of the United States will accuse them of racial profiling. So because they hesitated and didn't pull a gun, he pulled a gun on them and executed two of them. And then when a tax squad went after them, he shot two more and killed two more. See, so what you got to watch out what you say in this country because it can kill people. You talk about the power of words, Mr. Obama. You are wrong. Now I'm going to read the police report. Not yet. No. Now I'm going to take a few callers better. New York, WOR, go ahead, Mark. Mark, yes. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
These guys that were giving away their organs, they knew they were giving it away. They knew how much it was being sold for. If there's a market out there, it's tragic they have to do it. But these guys were big boys, and they knew what they were doing. They knew what they were selling it for, and that's the market for it. The main crime these guys did is...
Wait, hold on. What did you just say? You don't even understand the ethics involved because you don't have any ethical part of your being. You mean anything that's a dollar is good? Anything for a buck is fair?
Absolutely not, but these guys wanted to do it. They
absolutely not. If you wanted to sell heroin to a 14-year-old child and the kid knows it's heroin, is that okay to sell heroin to the child?
Absolutely not. But these guys were adults, and these guys are all adults, and they know what they're doing, and they need
money. When you say these guys, you mean the people who sold their organs knew what they were doing?
Exactly.
So you're saying let the free organ market decide?
I'm not saying it's a free organ market, but these guys wanted lots of money. It was probably more than $10,000 a piece, and these guys wanted a lot, lots of money, and they figured give away an organ.
But don't you understand the ethical questions involved in inducing poor people to sell organs? Don't you understand what's involved here?
Who says they were induced? These guys wait in line to do it, probably. That's what I think. These guys want loads of money.
But you shouldn't encourage that kind of behavior if you have any ethics. Because I'll tell you where this leads. Do you know that we could reach a point in America where a rich man might be able to hire a poor man to take a sentence for him in prison for the right amount of money? What if we reach the point, a man commits murder, but with such a degenerated society that the rich man can hire a poor man to serve 20 years in jail for him? Or he's found guilty and he's given a death sentence, but he's wealthy enough to find a poor guy who'll give the money to his family, and for $1 million the poor guy will be executed and the rich guy doesn't get punished. Would you see a problem with that, or you'd say the poor guy knew what he was doing?
That would be a great problem. And do you think this is the same thing?
Well, by the way, my friend, if you think that I'm making this up and it's outlandish, it's happened in history. So what you got to understand is that an ethical society has to establish ethical principles. You don't encourage poor people to sell body organs for money. Thanks for the call. Play the klezmer music for a minute. I already have a migraine. Migraine from the music, from the organ. It's terrible that it's Orthodox Jews of the Syrian Jewish community, they say. Not Syrian Jewish community. The Syrian. Not Assyrian. Syrian. They say Semir Syrian. But again, it's these limited guys, that's all. Turn it off already. They know the music. Now, did the Cambridge police act stupidly, as Obama said, or did Obama act stupidly, and did Henry Gates Jr. cause it? On the above time and date, I was on uniform duty, an unmarked police cruiser assigned to the administration section, working from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Approximately 12:44 p.m., I was operating my cruiser on Harvard Street near Ware Street. This is the police report. At that time, I overheard an ECC broadcast for possible break-in in progress at Ware Street. Due to my proximity, I responded, but when I arrived at 10 Ware Street, I radioed ECC and asked if they have the caller meet me at the front door to the residence. I was told that the caller was already outside. As I was getting this info, I climbed the porch stairs toward the front door. As I reached the door, a female voice called out to me. I turned and looked in the direction of the voice and observed a white female, later identified as Lucia Whalen. Whalen, who was standing on the sidewalk in front of the residence, held a wireless telephone in her hand, told me that it was she who called. She went on to tell me that she observed what appeared to be two black males with backpacks on the porch of Ware Street. She told me that her suspicions were aroused when she observed one of the men wedging his shoulder into the door as if he was trying to force entry. Now, let's pause right here. I believe that Al Sharpton could bring a lawsuit through some degenerate lawyer against the neighbor. Because just because she saw two black men wedging their shoulders into a door didn't mean they were breaking in. This was racial profiling on the part of the neighbor. So if I were Henry Louis Gates Jr., I would sue the neighbor. I would sue Cambridge. I'd sue God for even making white people. Because if there were no white people, there'd be no racism. And then there'd be no Henry Louis Gates Jr. as a professor. He wouldn't have gotten where he is, since it was only white liberals who put him there. So then the police report goes on. As I turned and faced the door, I could see an older black male standing in the foyer of Ware Street. I used to say foyer when I lived in the Bronx. But then when I moved to California, I had to say foyer. I had to upgrade my lingo. To me, it's still foyer. I saw an older black male standing in the foyer of Ware Street. I made this observation through the glass-paned front door. Very high class in Boston, in Cambridge. Real granny house. Queen Anne front, Mary Anne behind. As I stood in plain view of this man, later identified as Gates, I asked if he would step out onto the porch and speak with me. He replied, "No, I will not." He then demanded to know who I was. I told him I was Sergeant Crowley from the Cambridge Police, and I was investigating a report of a break in progress of the residence. As I was making this statement, Gates opened the front door and exclaimed, "Why? Because I'm a talc man in America? Is that a correct word, talc man? What's T-A-L-C? Somebody must have typed this wrong. Black man in America. Someone typed it wrong. I then asked Gates if there was anyone else in the residence. While yelling, he told me that it was none of my business and accused me of being a racist police officer. So let's stop right there. Right off the bat, right out of the gate, Gates is the troublemaker and the racist. The minute you scream racism at a cop, when he's only doing his job. He called, you're the racist. I assured Gates that I was responding to a citizen's call to the Cambridge police, and the caller was outside as he spoke. Gates seemed to ignore me, picked up a cordless telephone, and dialed an unknown telephone number. As he did so, I radioed on Channel 1 that I was off in the residence with someone who appeared to be a resident but very uncooperative. I then overheard Gates asking the person he had entered his telephone call to get the chief, and what's the chief's number? Gates was telling the person on the other of the call that he was dealing with a racist police officer in his house. Gates then turned to me and told me that I had no idea who I was messing with and that I had not heard the last of it. Oh, you ain't kidding. While I was led to believe that Gates was lawfully in the residence, I was quite surprised and confused with the behavior he exhibited toward me. I asked Gates to provide me with photo ID so that I could verify that he resided at Ware Street and so that I could radio my findings to ECC. Gates initially refused, demanding that I show him ID and then disapply me with a Harvard University ID card. Upon learning that Gates was affiliated with Harvard, I radioed and requested the presence of the Harvard University police. Let's pause right here. Gates says to him, you show me your ID card. In other words, Gates was being a pain in the butt. Gates was being aggressive. Gates was challenging the cop in a way he shouldn't have challenged him. The cop was only doing his job. Gates is a troublemaking guy who got where he is by doing this all his life, and he suddenly wasn't going to change spots because a cop caught him breaking into his own house. That's all. That's just being himself, in other words. I'll go on. That was an editorial. With the Harvard University ID in hand, I radioed my findings to ECC on Channel 2 and prepared to leave. Now, the cop is leaving now. Gates again asked for my name, which I began to provide. Gates began to yell over my spoken words by accusing me of being a racist police officer and leveling threats that he wasn't someone to mess with. Oh, hey, you don't know who I am. See, the whole thing here is that Gates was pissed off that the cop didn't know who he was. Everyone should know who he is. You know, after all, he's a distinguished professor of Afro-American studies. Why, when he walks down the street, the pavement itself should part for him. Everybody in Cambridge knows me. Who are you, you little cracker? You don't know who I am, you illiterate white trash, you? I am Henry Louis Gates, Jr. I am a distinguished professor of everything in the world, and you don't know me, you little twerp? See, that's the undertone here. He was pissed that they didn't know who he was. At some point during this exchange, I became aware that Officer Carlos Figueroa was standing behind me. When Gates asked a third time for my name, I explained to him that I had provided it at his request two separate times. Gates continued to yell at me. I told Gates that I was leaving his residence and that if he had any other questions regarding the matter, I would speak with him outside of the residence. As I began walking through the foyer toward the front door, I could hear Gates again demanding my name, again told Gates that I would speak with him outside. My reason for wanting to leave the residence was that Gates was yelling very loud and the acoustics of the kitchen and foyer, were making it difficult for me to transmit pertinent information to ECC or other responding units. His reply was, yeah, I'll speak with your mama outside. Very high class. That's really high class, Gates. Is that what you teach your students? Is that in African-American studies to tell everyone I'll see your mama outside? When I left the residence, I noted that there were several Cambridge and Harvard University police officers assembled on the sidewalk in front of the residence. Additionally, the caller, Mrs. Watton, and at least seven unidentified passersby were looking in the direction of Gates who had followed me outside of the residence. As I descended the stairs to the sidewalk, Gates continued to yell at me, accusing me of racial bias, and continued to tell me that I had not heard the last of him. Due to the tumultuous manner Gates had exhibited in his residence, as well as the continued tumultuous behavior outside the residence view of the public, I warned Gates that he was becoming disorderly. Gates ignored my warning and continued to yell, which drew the attention of both the polite officers, the police officers and citizens, who appeared surprised and alarmed by Gates' outburst. For a second time, I warned Gates to calm down while I withdrew. My department issued handcuffs from their carrying case. Gates again ignored my warning and continued to yell at me. It was at this time that I informed Gates that he was under arrest. I then stepped up to the stairs onto the porch and attempted to place handcuffs on Gates. Gates initially resisted my attempt to handcuff him, yelling that he was disabled and would fall without his cane. Oh, suddenly he was disabled. Another racket, by the way. You ever see the blue cards when they jump out and they see you looking at them? Suddenly they grab the cane. When you're not looking, they spring into the restaurant. You have to drive around the corner. You ever see the people with the blue cards? This is not a racial thing. This is a fake handicap thing. This guy's got everything covered to Monday. He's got the race racket. He's got the handicap. Now suddenly he's handicapped. When he's shooting his mouth off, he wasn't handicapped. Now they got the handcuffs. I am going to fall and I got the cane. He was disabled and he would fall without his cane. After the handcuffs were properly applied, Gates complained that they were too tight. Oh, come on. I then ordered officer whatever who was among them to handcuff Gates with his arms in front of him for his comfort while I secured a cane for Gates from within the residence. I then asked Gates if he would like an officer to take possession of his house key and secure his front door, which he left wide open. Gates told me that the door was unsecurable due to a previous break attempt at the residence. You hear this? So in other words, he's admitting there was a previous break-in attempt. The cop was protecting him from because they knew there was a previous break-in from the police blotter. Shortly thereafter, a Harvard University maintenance person arrived on the scene appeared familiar with Gates. I asked Gates if he was comfortable with this Harvard University maintenance person securing his residence. He told me that he was. Oh, it's a university housing on top of it all. In addition to the big salary, they get a nice old Queen Anne home. On top of it all, another freebie worth about $1 million a year, $300,000 a year. After a brief consultation with V. Lashley, and upon Gates' request, he was transported to the street police in a police cruiser, where he was booked and processed. I report, you decide. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd biddy-biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man,
Okay. Turn it off already, will you? They know we're talking two topics, the organs and the Obama as racist promoter of intercommunity tension. I mean, the president is a promoter of intercommunity tension by calling the white cop who, as far as I could tell, was doing his job. Apparently, Gates' house was broken into before, so there was a call about a break-in. He shows up, and instead of being a gentleman about it, Gates provokes the cop by calling him names and not cooperating. You know, because he's God, after all. I made a fortune bringing in organs. Are you kidding? Oh, I made a fortune with your father bringing in organs from Cuba with the molasses. While you were a cheerleader, I was making a bundle on the organs. Are you kidding me? In Las Vegas, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
The guy that just called in is retarded. I am a nurse, and to sell an organ, you cannot do it. It's against the law. It's unethical. I'm also an atheist, and I know that's unethical. You can't sell organs. You can't sell limbs. You can't sell blood. You have to give that stuff away. It's called humanity.
I understand that. It has nothing to do with atheism. It has to do with humanity, is right?
It's just humanity.
It has nothing to do with religion. In other words, let's put aside religious belief. Let's talk about one human being to another. If you encourage a poor man to sell an organ for money, you know where that's going to lead. Then they'll sell a child into prostitution, which they're doing. Then they're going to sell themselves to the guillotine for a rich man, which has been done in historic times. You put a stop to that in a civilized world. Thanks for the call. See, I have atheist listeners, so don't accuse me of creating intercommunity tension between myself and atheists. If I reach me, let's hear Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates himself on his arrest. Let's hear this.
I'm outraged. I shouldn't have been treated this way, but it makes me so keenly aware of how many people every day experience abuses in the criminal justice system.
Oh, shut up. What? You see what happens here? You see what happens here? You scratch the surface of the civility, and you know what you have underneath it? Al Sharpton. Underneath every Henry Louis Gates Jr. at Harvard, there's an Al Sharpton waiting to come out. I don't know how the cops take this. I just don't know. Look what they have to fill out. You ever see a police report like this? Every incident, they have to spend an hour filling out an encyclopedia to make sure some verminous lawyer doesn't sue them and they don't lose their job or go to jail and lose their pension. Who would take this job? How are you going to get honest young men to take a job like this if you continue to harass them? The answer is you won't. So you wind up with corrupt cops. You wind up with a Mexico situation. That's where we're going. Precisely because of this kind of behavior on the part of the lawyers, the Henry Louis Gates Jr., and the Marxist media. The Marxist in the media. I got a sore throat already. It's only not even an hour into the show. Who's got the best call up there? Who's the best caller of all of them right down there? This is a hot day. This is like made for radio. And by the way, before I go to the kidneys and the Henry Louis Gates and the cop thing, I had a dream last night. Please indulge me. It was so shocking. It woke me up. Now, you know what I'm going through with England. I'm not going to cry on your shoulder. I got myself into it, and with your help, I'll get myself out of it, okay? Here's the dream. I'm walking in a windstorm. I mean a windstorm that could blow you over. The trees are bending. It's almost blowing me over. I'm lost. I'm trying to get home. And where I am trying to get is a typical U.S. street, beautiful street lamps, Elm Street, USA. And I'm trying to find my way home to Elm Street, USA. The storm is blowing real heavy. Lightning is flashing. I think I better hide under a tree. I better get down and lay down. And then I think to myself, no, don't lay down, because the minute you lay down, you're never going to continue on this march. You're never going to get home. You got to keep walking. So I say, don't you remember as a child in New York when the winters were severe, how much you loved the wind? And instead of walking into the wind, what you did was you walked with your back to the wind. And that's what I remembered. So I said, don't lay down when the wind is hitting you. I wake up, as in my dream, a white lightning is flashing in the middle of this windstorm. And I say to myself, what the heck was that dream? The immediate first thought was Washington crossing the Delaware when his boat almost capsized. And had that boat capsized, had Washington given up, it would have allowed the British to suppress the revolution. The U.S. would not have been created. We would have remained a colony, subjects, not citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something. God's hand is involved in everything that I am going through right now. You don't have to believe it. All that's important is that you know that I believe it. All you got to know is that I believe it. It doesn't matter whether you do. I'm not asking you to believe me. I'm asking you to understand that I believe me. I'm not asking you to join me in my belief. I'm not asking you to give me a halo. I am telling you that I believe that what I am going through with this English ban and the attempt to squash me and free speech, at the end of the day, it's going to expose the labor socialist government as being, well, let's say that component, that cell of the labor socialist government, that particular cell, as being quasi-fascist. Wait until you see what you find in there. So there's much more at stake than me, and I'm going to remind you of something else. Do you remember I told you in the first or second grade in PS 48 in the Bronx, I'm not an artist, but I did a drawing of Washington crossing the Delaware, and I got so into it, all I saw were the waves, and I kept drawing the blue waves, and I don't remember anything but painting the blue waves, painting, painting, painting. When I got through, the teacher said, that's great. And she made me walk around the whole school, and she said, here's Michael. He drew a painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware. I've never painted another picture since. I was moved by that. I have no idea why. I think that fate is operating. I think I am simply in God's hands. Something's here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yeah, all day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work.
Hi, this is Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot. Need a kidney? No problem. You need a cornea? No problem. Skin? Skin transplant? No problem. Ears, lungs, eyes, whatever. We got him. Think Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot for the cleanest in organs. If you would like an especially clean pair of kidneys, we've got the gal just for you. Meet Wan Fu. She's 19 years of age, has never drunk, never smoked cigarettes. Her crime? She was caught reading the United States Constitution. She is scheduled for execution sometime during the next 6 months. And we at Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot can arrange a clean pair of kidneys from this young lady. Come and see Cheng Wang's booklet of innocent clean prisoners for your selection process immediately. Now dial 1-800-GO-ORGAN. That's 1-800-G-O-O-R-G-A-N to get Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot. This month we have a special. Buy two kidneys, get a spleen free. Buy two lungs, get a heart free. Buy some skin, we'll throw in the hair. Buy two corneas, we'll throw in a nose.
Again, 1-800-GO-ORGAN. Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot. For the organ in your future!
I did that in 1996-97 when there was a big scandal about organs being harvested from innocent prisoners in China. Of course, today the focus is upon a different group of individuals smuggling in organs from Israel, and so I thought I would replay the 1-800-GO-ORGAN piece because it's one of my favorites. And here we are, 1-800-449-8255. To me, the other big issue is Obama calling the policeman stupid in Cambridge. I read the police report. There's no question in my mind that Gates Jr. is the man who caused the altercation. He didn't like that the police officer either didn't know who he was or wouldn't acknowledge who he was. And so he started to mouth off to the cop. He got disorderly. He got arrested. And then he screamed all of a sudden he was disabled and he would faint and needed a cane. I mean, he got every racket coming this way to Sunday. Are you kidding me? He got the big professorship. He got the free house. He's got the handicap job. He's got the racism card. What else does he need? I think the cop responded perfectly. And I'll tell you right now, if the cop is attacked and has to defend himself, you know who will be there for him. Many of you have been there for me. I will be there for him. I have defended police in the past. I've defended the Marines in the past who were unfairly accused. I defended the Ramos and Campion who were unfairly accused, and I'm going to defend this officer with dollars if need be. Okay, so that's it. He's got friends here in the Savage Nation. We don't know him. He doesn't know me. I don't need anything from him. I only want the truth to come out. The fact of the matter is, by reading the police report, it turns out that Gates' house had been broken into before. The neighbor saw two black men trying to force their way into the house. She didn't know if they were black. She didn't know if they were white. She didn't know if they would belong there or didn't. If he was so well known, why would his own neighbor call the police? Was she also a racist too? Maybe she knew his house had been broken into before. So she calls the cops. He tries to do his job right away. It's a racial experience. Here comes Al Sharpton right off Fox News, where O'Reilly's having dinner with him somewhere. And right away, racism. Everything's racism. So if you want to talk about that, you can. If you want to talk about Obama, let's listen to Obama, what he had to say.
Race remains a factor in the society. That doesn't lessen the incredible progress that has been made. I am standing here as testimony to progress
that's
been
made. There's always
more
progress to be made. In other words, your wife could be president next, and your children, and whites could wind up with nothing. That would be real progress. In other words, the ultimate end of this progress is that all whites wind up working on a plantation. Is that the ultimate end of the progress? You know, there's a point at which you got to start pushing back at this bull crap and say enough is enough with this race garbage. Take it and shove it. I don't care if you're the president of the universe. The man standing there, the president of the United States, elected not because he cured polio, not because he cured cancer, not because he invented anything, not because he saved anything, not because he built anything, not because he met a payroll, not because he built a business, but because he knew how to work the system. The man yanked the chain of the white liberal from the time he was in Punahou High School. Old Barry Obama learned early on how to yank the chain of the good libs in Hawaii, in Honolulu. Look where he got. But it's still not far enough. Oh, no. There's progress. But to a progressive, there is no such thing as ultimate progress. Just as to an infomaniac, there's never enough sex, so to a progressive, there's never enough progress. You can mark that one down in bronze. Hiya, New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi. By the way, my name Hiya, which means life-giving. I happen to be a kidney matchmaker. I donated a kidney myself, since I wanted to do more, I now have a project to help other people who are in desperate need of a kidney. And my brother donated a kidney as well. And if anybody contacts me, I've made kidney matches. Nobody gets paid.
But Hiya, wait. What? I understand that you're a good person. This is amazing. What do you think about the rabbis involved in the kidney trade?
I think it's terribly shocking, but you know what? I'm in touch with many people in the Orthodox Jewish communities and Hasidic communities who have donated kidneys to strangers, and nobody's taken any money. So this is just one person, maybe in a thorn in the bush.
All right, good to know. Very good to know. Thank you very. What's the name of your group?
If they go to donateakidney.net, they can get to my website or savealifedonateakidney.com.
You don't make any money from this?
I help Jews and non-Jews as well, but I
do. Do you make any money from this?
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't get paid for this. I don't charge a fee.
God bless you. You're a saint. Give us the name of the website again.
Altruistic. Everything.
What's the name of the website again?
DonateAKidney.net. There are people.
God bless you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Las Vegas, Nevada, Lynn, welcome. What's on your mind, Lynn?
Michael, I think your dream had to do with leading people and you being a leader, and just like Moses in the wilderness, how he had to lead the children of Israel out of the wilderness. Even though they didn't pay attention and they bickered amongst themselves, he was doing what God led him to do, and a lot of people are looking for a leader right now, and that is you.
Well, I'm one among several, but let me say this. In the dream, I was distinctly, I remember the street I was trying to find. I wanted to find my way back to a typical U.S. street that I think I once lived on, but I never really did, Lynn. In other words, a street that doesn't exist anymore. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to bring myself back home, that is, to the United States, that I dreamed existed. A U.S. street, but I couldn't get there. A storm hit me instead. And just as I turned a corner in this windstorm and thought I was finally on the street, it led to a cul-de-sac. It led to a dead end. And the wind was blowing, and it was hurricane-level wind. And I said, oh, my God, am I lost? And I didn't know which way to turn. I turned around. I said, no, you're not lost. Go back down the street you just came from and turn right again. Go up to the next street, and you will find your way home.
It sounds like.
I mean, my dreams to me are almost God's. They're amazing to me. I dream in color. Most people I know don't dream at all. They don't remember their dreams, Lynn. Do you know that?
Yes, I dream in animation, and my husband thinks that that's the funniest thing. He's never done anything.
Oh, you dream with animated figures?
Absolutely.
Oh, wait a minute. I've never heard of that. That's amazing.
My kids, yeah. I have very weird dreams. Since I was a little girl.
Well, that's very interesting. One day we'll devote a whole show to dreams, because my show is a takeoff on memories, dreams, etc. And I thank you very much for that interpretation. 1-800-449-8255. San Francisco. Alan on KNEW. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, Carmel, California.
I want to let
you know, with decades of police experience and supervision, I can tell you that your assessment of this is exactly correct. The only thing that the Cambridge Police Department did wrong was to drop the charges. Now that officer's wide open to a lawsuit, they're essentially admitting that there was no basis for the charges in the first place.
Oh, because of political pressure, they dropped Gates's police report and the charges, and now he's going to scream false arrest. Is that it?
Sure he will. That's what he does. If I had those circumstances and he asked for the badge number, what I would have told Gates was, fine, your badge number is going to be on the booking slip.
How about when he said to the officer, I'll meet your mama outside? What is that, some kind of slur?
He's looking. Your mama, there's a connotation every time someone says your mama, and there's a word.
Well, what does that mean in black slang? I don't study African American literature. What does that actually mean? Is it something to do with your mother's a prostitute? Is that it?
Yes, it's F.
So this distinguished professor of Afro American studies uses a gutter slur on a white cop, and he screams racism.
That's right, and now. We have major problems in this country. It's falling apart because of this guy in the White House. But he's got time to interject himself when he admittedly doesn't know the circumstances in this case and condemns the officer, the President of the United States, which will give credibility, I'm sure, in the lawsuit. I hope they call him as a witness to testify as to why he made these statements about the officer when they lose the case.
Well, who's going to lose the case, though?
They're going to lose it. It just depends.
Wait, who's they? The police department's going to lose the case?
Pardon me?
You're saying the Cambridge police are going to lose the case and that Gates is going to make another fortune off race?
I hope not, Michael. This should not happen. You know, every time they mention race, exactly as you said, they should be told to shut up. They should, whether it's Sharpton or whoever these people who trade in race, they should shut up.
But the president's trading in racial games. He's saying, yet we must recognize the minorities are detained disproportionately to whites, and that's just a fact. It is a fact because it's unfortunately true that minorities commit more crimes disproportionately to whites in our society. That's also a fact, is it not?
56% of the murders in this country, FBI statistics, are committed by one race. Can you figure out which race it is?
No, I can't because I don't study such things, but it's disproportionate, I'm sure, to their proportion in the society.
Yes, Michael, they commit, the African-American race commits 56% of the murders. That's an approximation from FBI statistics.
Well, according to Obama, progress has been made, though.
Yeah, yeah. Can I give Obama a message?
Yes.
I would like Mr. Obama to understand that he is the affirmative action president of the United States. That's correct.
I've said it over and over again. I'm not afraid to say it. I am standing by the words that were it not for the guilt of white liberals and the affirmative action laws, Obama never would have been president. He wouldn't have been a senator. The whole thing is built upon a house of guilt.
That's right. Look where we are today.
The man has almost, by the way, he was stopped in his tracks today. They had to withdraw the so-called health care reform bill from the Senate because they didn't have the votes. Do you realize what that has done to Obama's juggernaut?
Yes.
Come on. That is a major defeat for Obama. It possibly will derail his entire agenda, and I think that the country was saved by God's hand. And I believe that if we're not for talk radio, we would have had socialized medicine in America with costs that were unsustainable. God bless America. I'll be right back.
The people that we have arrested today include mayors, deputy mayors, New Jersey State Assemblymen, city councilmen, city council candidates, and a variety of other public officials ranging from commissioners to regulatory inspectors, and of course, a number of rabbis from the Jewish community.
Where's the one about the rabbis and the associates and rectitude you said was in there? Why is it not in there? These rings cloak their activity behind a facade of rectitude. I love the word rectitude, because they certainly wrecked the dude, I'll tell you that. Rectitude. Rectitude. Why is it not in there? A great production today, guys. Oh, so let's have clip 12 now. Come on. Come on, guys. 12.
In today's investigation, the one we're announcing today, activity that we engaged in with the charged criminals include the fact that we laundered over $3 million through a series of prominent rabbis in New Jersey and the New York metropolitan area. Included among the rabbis was one who happens to be the chief rabbi of the Syrian Jewish Church in the United States.
Now, wait a minute. How could you have a Syrian Jewish church? Does he mean Syrian Jewish synagogue? Let's hear clip eight.
I must also mention, connected to the money laundering, we have one defendant, Mr. Rosenbaum, who we refer to as our kidney salesman. As set forth in the complaint, his business was to entice vulnerable people to give up a kidney for $10,000, which he in turn would turn around and sell for $160,000.
Yeah, you buy near, you sell dear. That's all. What do you think he's going to buy for $160 and sell for $10? What are you, stupid? No, he's going to pay $150 and sell it for $5? Schmuck. How are you going to make a buck if you don't pay low and buy low and pay high? What are you talking? Let's hear the whole speech now. Go ahead.
The FBI and the IRS have arrested and noticed for arrest 29 individuals, including assemblymen and mayors, underscoring more than ever the pervasive nature of public corruption in this state. On the other side, the FBI and IRS have arrested and summoned 15 members of connected international money laundering rings, including five rabbis and their associates. As outlined in the complaints, these rings, led by clergymen, cloak their extensive criminal activity behind a facade of rectitude.
Like that, facade of rectitude. Those are the words I was looking for. And there's more coming, which I'm going to play for you. This is not a religiously motivated case. It does not smear the entire Orthodox community. But on the other hand, we don't have to go lightly on this either. Okay, we're going to tell you how they did it and what the rabbi had to do with it on the Savage Nation. We're not going to go light on it.
Savage.
Well, we're talking about some big issues today, the arrest of Henry Louis Gates Jr. and him mouthing off to the police and starting an altercation and then screaming racism in a crowded nation. We're talking about the sale of organs. We're talking about money laundering by rabbis, allegedly, in New Jersey. Jay in New York, WOR, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to make a few quick points. First off, concerning Louis Gates, I believe that he did produce two forms of identification, and I think it should have stopped at that. I don't know if you know that police routinely change their police reports just to justify their actions. So whatever.
Well, let's pause right here. Let's take your side of it for a minute. Who initiated the police arriving at Gates's house? How did this start?
I guess a neighbor. My understanding is that a neighbor saw these two guys coming, and I guess they didn't realize it was actually Mr. Gates, so they called the police.
Wait. What do you mean two guys? They were opening it with a key?
No, I mean, apparently he lost his key, so they were trying to kind of break into his own house, and that's
all right. So a neighbor sees two men trying to break into a house. She calls the police, so the police have to go there. Is that correct?
That's okay. That's fine.
Okay, she observed one of the men wedging his shoulder into the door as if he was trying to enter. So the policeman shows up. Has the policeman done anything wrong yet? We could both agree no.
Nothing wrong. That's absolutely
all right.
Okay.
So let's be reasonable about this. The cop gets there. He sees the man inside now, and he says to the guy, could you please step out on the porch and identify himself?
Right.
And Gates says, no, I will not.
See, that's the part that I don't know. I mean, my understanding is that he showed two forms of identification, and, you know, that should have, he produced the identification. It should have stayed right there. Why?
Cop says, I made this observation, and I could see an older black male standing in the foyer of the house. I asked if he would step out onto the porch and speak with me. He said, no, I will not. He then demanded to know who I was. I then told him I was Sergeant Crowley from the Cambridge Police and that I was investigating a report of a break-in in progress at the residence.
Okay.
And then Gates opens the front door and says, why? Because I'm a black man in America? So right away he came out with an attitude, wouldn't you say?
It seems so.
You know, look, there's two sides to every story, but to start screaming right away that the cops went there to harass him doesn't seem correct to me, Jay.
I didn't say that. I think that it was appropriate for the officer to go there because there was a report of an alleged break-in. But once he produced identification showing that he lived there, it should have stopped right there. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. And what about the distinguished professor of Afro-American studies saying, I'll come outside and I'll talk to your mama? Okay, what do you think about that? Is that he said, yeah, I'll speak with your mama outside. Is that a distinguished thing to say?
That might not have been appropriate, but, you know, I'm just talking for what the...
Well, but we're talking about the R word here, racism and race. And wouldn't you say that it was Gates Jr. who started the racial brouhaha here by throwing out racially charged statements such as, are you picking on me because I'm black, or yes, I'll speak with your mama outside? Yeah. Wouldn't you say he sort of provoked the whole issue of race?
If indeed he said that, I think what happened is that the officer took offense to that and decided, you know what, I'm going to arrest this guy. So he got back at him. But I don't think that was justified.
When I left the residence, I noted there were several police, Cambridge and Harvard University police officers outside. So in other words, he doesn't arrest him yet. There's passerbys, there's other cops. And as he descends the stairs, Gates continues to yell at him, accusing him of racial bias, continuing to tell me that I had not heard the last of him. Now, he's not yet arrested, but he's throwing words at the cop as he's leaving. You follow?
I hear what you're saying.
Now, let's pause. If this is true, meaning if it can be verified by passerbys, by Cambridge police, by university police, you'd have to say the officer tried his best to leave without causing an arrest, didn't he?
Right. I mean, if that indeed is what happened, I would say that, you know, hey, I mean, maybe Gates should not have gone that far if he hadn't been arrested yet. But
all right. So at that point, then, the cop's trying to leave. Gates ignores his warnings to stop. He's becoming disorderly. Gates continues to yell. The attention, the police officers and citizens notice this. If they could get this in a court of law, I think that we can all agree that it was Gates himself who provoked the whole thing. Thank you for the call. I rest my case. And see, I had a caller who was at least willing to listen to the police report. Now, this could be found out in a court of law. You know what this is going to cost the government? How many millions of dollars are we going to have to spend on this troublemaking professor from Harvard? He didn't get enough out of society? He didn't get enough. He's a full professor, chairman of the department, a free house. He's got everything covered this way to Sunday. Now he needs a lawsuit to go with it. Because there's not been enough progress made. We only have a black president. That's not enough progress yet. Now let's go back to the wonderful case out of New Jersey. We have Mark McCarron, the New Jersey Corruption Litigation Counselor, in clip 14. Go ahead, please.
One system involved, in our case, the CW going to a rabbi, one in particular, Rabbi Eli Ben Haim, providing that rabbi with a bank check ranging from a few thousand dollars to up to $160,000. In return, Rabbi Ben Haim, through contacts in Israel, would arrange for cash to be made available at various locations in New York City and in Brooklyn in particular.
Now, a CW is a cooperating witness. So the cooperating witness gives the rabbi money. The rabbi, through his contacts in Israel, arranges for cash to flow back into the U.S. in New York City and Brooklyn to pick it up in parcels. That's called money laundering 101. And how does he launder the money? Through charities. So in other words, he makes Madoff look like a piker. Let's listen to clip 16.
Rabbi Ben Haim provided a great deal of detail to the CW about this network that he was part of and described the fact that in prior years he had been washing up to $6, $7, $8 million a year, although he said that it was only about $1 or $2 million over the last couple of years.
Business is down. Look, the economy's not good. It went from 9 to 2. Horrible. Let's hear clip 15.
The CW, on occasion, was able to go pick up the cash himself. He would then bring it back to Rabbi Ben Haim. Rabbi Ben Haim would give him approximately 90% back of the face value of the bank check that the CW had brought to Rabbi Ben Haim.
Well, it's very democratic. Everybody makes a little off the top, you know, 10% here, 10% there. You know, didn't all go in his hand. I mean, he spread it around. He's a very fair rabbi. Let's hear 17 now.
Rabbi Ben Haim was not the only one who dealt in cash. There are targets, and those are set forth in the complaint, including Rabbi Mordecai Fish, who would arrange through various other sources for cash to be made available to the CW in exchange for bank checks. Typically, they would use charitable organizations through which to launder the bank checks that were provided by the CW.
Now, that's the interesting part. They would use charitable organizations through which to launder the bank checks. This is not good for business, because anyone who gives money now to a charity is going to think twice about which charity they give money to. I am soon going to divulge on my website the groups I sent money to and the way I was treated. I gave significant amounts of money to the NRA. I got a letter in return, a form letter, like I gave $5. I gave money to the Boy Scouts of America. I got a form letter, not so much as a lanyard, as though I gave 4 cents. It's amazing to me what happens when you give money to groups. I mean, I don't expect them to hold me up you could write a letter, you could make a call. After all, I am a talk show host with millions of listeners. You'd think the Boy Scouts of America, you'd think the NRA would want me to go on there and say what a great group they are. I am sorry to tell you I was treated very shabbily by both organizations, and I will never give them another 10 cents. I'm not accusing them of violating any charitable laws, but I don't like the way I was dismissed as though I was a mark to send money in. I'm so in disenamored of charitable giving right now, you have no idea. And with Obama raising taxes, you know where it's all going to go? I'll spend it all on myself. That's where it's going to go. Sure, if I find the cop who needs the money because he's falsely accused or a soldier who's falsely charged, I'll help them. but please leave me alone already with the charities. All right, so then there's the Gorilla Fund and the Elephant Fund. I pray to God the money really goes to kill poachers rather than to send the head of the fund on a junket to Phuket, you know, to get little boys and girls. I mean, I don't know. You don't know anymore where the money ends up. Thank you very much. We saved 3 elephants this year, you know. What do I know what they saved? I have a soft spot for elephants and mountain gorillas, so you try to help. Locally, I gave to the Humane Society. Them, I know they do good. Then I gave to a Wild Animal Society. I know they do good. They don't even take any money from the group. They thank me profusely. It's funny, the less I gave to some groups, the more thanks I got. It's like the old T-shirt. My parents went to Fisherman's Wharf, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. Remember that? That's what I like to print up for. I gave the NRA, I'll fill in the amount one day, and all I got was a form letter. I gave the Boy Scouts of America, well, you see the number, and all I got was a form letter. You know? So, I don't know. I'm giving you personal reactions to the whole charity thing. All my life, I could not give money to charity. So I have a little extra I give to charities, and I don't like what I get back. So you say, what should you get back? Shouldn't you give just to be giving? I don't know. Should I? I mean, I'm not that charitable in that regard then. I should give the money and not expect anything? Is that it? I shouldn't even expect a lanyard from the Boy Scouts, a plaque? From the NRA, they shouldn't have sent me a bullet. I mean, something like a mounted bullet as a donor. They sent me a form letter like I'm a putz from Oklahoma who sent them 9 cents. Dear Schmuck, thank you for your money. Like people like you will stave off communism and Schumer will take away on. Everything's a racket. Don't you understand? So we're talking about the rabbi racket here. We're talking about the organ racket. It's horrible. It's enough to make you stay home, lock your gates, and turn on the TV at night and go out nowhere. That's all. I don't want to socialize with anybody. I don't understand socialization. Every time I see society and socialization, it's all set up to rob people of money. Take a look at Madoff. Let's go back to Madoff for a minute. He was in every club, every Jewish club in Palm Beach. I mean, let's say it like it is. Let's not mince words. They were basically Jewish country clubs. And the Jews who joined thought that they were safe by investing with Madoff because he wasn't non-Jewish. You get it? You think I'm going to give my money to a non-Jew? I'm going to give it to him. Are you kidding? We know him well. He's one of us. And to get money in his hands, you have no idea how lucky I am. Oh, don't ask. Every year they collected 10%. So the guy gave him $1 million. Each year he collected like clockwork, 100 grand, 120,000. So for 10 years, the guy made back his $1 million. Now at the end of the road, Madoff says it was all a scam. He goes to jail and the guy screams, thief, thief, thief of the night. I want my $1 million back. But he's not telling you he got the $1 million back over 10 years and he spent it. Why should I pay him back through FISA or Schmeisa? It's a bubba-misa for me to pay him back through FISA. I don't want to pay him, Jack. You got the money, Johnson. What do you want from me? Secondly, there's a risk inherent in every investment. And the bigger the gain, the bigger the schmuck. I was making the half of 1% in T-bills because I'm a little old lady. And I don't want to take risks with gonifs. I don't care what their race is. I wouldn't invest my money with anybody. I don't trust anybody. So I didn't put in T-bills. I gave it to the biggest con man in the world, Timothy Geithner. And before him, the bigger con man, in my opinion, Paulson. But at least I figure they're such big con men that they can't afford to fail. When you're such a good con man, you become Treasury Secretary. In that sense, you're protected because they can't afford to fail. Then they have to go to war. It's the tried and true method to save every economy. It goes back to ancient times. When you get in trouble, you go to war and boom, the economy thrives. So I expect a hot war very soon. Obama needs a war right now to save his presidency, to rally the American people behind them, and to get the economy moving again. So where was I when I got so rudely distracted by my own riff? I'll be right back. Savage.
The other system which was used involved Chief Rabbi Saul Kassin and Rabbi Edmund Nahum. In those instances, the CW would bring a check, similar a bank check. He would provide it to the rabbi. The rabbi would then write a check for a slightly smaller amount, thus retaining the commission, write that check to the entity of the CW's choice, whether it be another charitable organization or individuals or what have you.
There goes the charities. They're going to have to get a job now. Just to lighten it up a bit, I want to read you something about flowers. And I'm going to ask you, whoever figures out what book I'm reading from wins a free copy of my book, Psychological Nudity. I'm testing your literary background here. It's one paragraph. In joy or sadness, flowers are our constant friends. We eat, drink, sing, dance, and flirt with them. We wed and christen with flowers. We dare not die without them. We have worship with the lily. We have meditated with the lotus. We have charged in battle array with the rose and the chrysanthemum. We have even attempted to speak in the language of flowers. How could we live without them? It frightens one to conceive of a world bereft of their presence. What solace do they not bring to the bedside of the sick? What a light of bliss to the darkness of weary spirits. Their serene tenderness restores to us our waning confidence in the universe, even as the intent gaze of a beautiful child recalls our lost hopes. When we are laid low in the dust, it is they who linger in sorrow over our graves. Who wrote that? Anyone know who wrote this? If you can name the book and the author, you win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. New York City, WOR. Howard, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Michael. Michael, I got to tell you, even when I don't agree with you, you're never wrong.
Okay? Oh, that's very Talmudic. I don't even understand what you said, but I know it's good.
Sounds good. I consider myself somewhere between a conservative and Orthodox Jew. I try to follow the Torah. I can tell you that these rabbis, if they're found guilty, are an absolute disgrace. They've got to apologize to every Jew. They've got to apologize to God. Frankly, they should know better and then some. Everything.
But what is the chief rabbi of the Syrian Jewish Church? Did he mean Syrian Jewish Synagogue?
I would hope that it's a Syrian church and he's not a rabbi, but whatever it means, I never heard of
it. Well, the guy's wearing an Oberkampus in the picture, and he's got the yarmulke and the Oberkampus in the picture I have.
Really a disgrace. It's right in Torah. Everything that they did and then some is prohibited, and they should know it a million times. If there's a sentence, it should be the maximum sentence, and they should be stripped of their rabbinical title. And if there was such...
But they're going to go to the same jail, the one that he was supposed to go to up there in Otisville, I think. That's a special country club. Thanks for the call. Otisville is a special... I think they're going to go into... You think they're going to go to a regular jail? Are you kidding? Otisville's the... They got special meals, the whole thing. That's the place you go to. If you're this kind of crime, you go to Otisville. New York City, Mickey, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'm just talking about the book that you read from. I'm thinking it's Healing Children Naturally.
Yes, sir. I don't understand.
Right?
Yeah, go ahead. What's on your mind, Mickey?
I was calling about the book that you just read from, the paragraph.
Oh, no. That, I didn't read it from that. No, thank you. Wrong. I would never read from my own book and as a test. Thank you. Thanks for thinking of me. Cheryl in Arkansas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to let you know that when you say you're not an artist, I believe that you are, because every time you describe your stories, you paint pictures in my mind about these people that you talk about. So I disagree with you when you say you are not an artist.
Well, Cheryl, you know, it takes a Southern lady like yourself to listen beyond my longshoreman's voice and hear the man within. Most people in America are so prejudiced and biased that they judge a man by his accent and his tone rather than what he's actually saying. You see, you hear the words, and then you let the words speak for themselves rather than, let us say, the gruff exterior voice. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And that's because you are a steel magnolia.
I hope so.
Speaking in metaphors, thank you for calling. I'm going to try to do a book every once in a while, like I just did, like what book I'm reading from. So far, nobody's got it right. Someone says Rachel Carson. Someone says the Book of Solomon. Someone says Mark Twain. No. I'm going to tell you the answer right now, so you don't have to call. It was the Book of Tea that I read from by Kakuzo, Okakura Kakuzo, one of the first books I read during the new enlightenment of Michael Savage when I was 18 years old. I just pulled it out of my library because I was bored of the topic of corruption and I can't take it anymore. And I want to think of snowy white mountains and oil painting.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what we've been talking about today in the Savage Nation. President Obama attacks the Cambridge, Massachusetts police. Remember, it was bad enough when President Bush undermined the U.S. Marines in Iraq, destroyed their careers and their lives. Now Obama is attacking the thin blue line, America's policemen. Why? Because they arrested a friend of Obama's, Henry Louis Gates Jr., a Harvard professor of African American Studies. He had the audacity to call what the Cambridge police did stupid, even though he was not there and they were just doing their job. Further, if you read the police report, you're going to find out that the racist here is not the cop. First of all, it's completely inappropriate for the president of the U.S. to single out a police officer in a case he knows nothing about. But secondly, to exploit the topic of race is the wrong thing for Obama to do. The fact of the matter is, he should have stayed out of this. I'm going to read for you again the police report that shows step by step exactly what these policemen did and proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that they did the right thing. In fact, the cop who arrested him, the officer arrested him, Sergeant James Crowley, happens to teach classes on how not to do racial profiling. This is a disaster for Henry Louis Gates Jr., who screamed racism once too often. The Savage Bombshell. Very soon you will know what was in the mind of the British government when it decided to ban Michael Savage from entering the United Kingdom. I have been asked not to discuss the specifics. However, for the next few days, you will see the ignorance, you will witness the blatant stupidity, and possibly the racism that was part of this decision. On Saturday night in this country and Sunday morning in England, a major British newspaper will publish all the details contained in the Freedom of Information Act report. Be on the lookout. What I'm going to reveal, what the newspapers in England are going to reveal, will turn the Labour government on its head. This information is a game changer. The tide of the media will turn. The tide of power in Britain will turn. So keep listening, because the bombshell that is going to be unleashed in the next few days about my case will have a drastic effect on the Labour government of Gordon Brown. This could be a final nail in the coffin of socialist power in Great Britain. It could be the final victory for freedom of speech over the oppression of would-be dictators that will restore Michael Savage's reputation and his rights. The corruption of religion. There's been a huge corruption sting in New Jersey involving money laundering, the selling of human organs. What is most frightening of all is the fact that several of those arrested in the case have been Orthodox Jewish rabbis. Those entrusted with carrying the word of God have instead engaged in the most base form of corruption. The rabbis arrested included the grand rabbi of the Syrian Jewish community in the U.S. Individuals have been accused of enticing people to give up a kidney for $10,000 and then turning around selling it for $160,000. Quite a markup, huh? Buy low, sell high. Buy near, sell dear. We've talked about the death of Walter Crankenhaus, Walter Cronkite. Although the mainstream media portrays him as the most trusted man in America, his coverage of the Vietnam War, as well as some of the groups he associated with, brings that trust into very serious question. Joining us now from Accuracy and Media to tell us more about the real Walter Crankenhaus is Cliff Kincaid. Cliff, what do you make of all of this Cronkite adulation?
Michael, at Accuracy and Media, we've been fascinated by the coverage of the death of longtime CBS News anchor man Walter Cronkite. It's a tragedy, but he lived a long life. We all have sympathy, and our condolences go out to his family. But the kind of coverage that this has engendered has been, well, it looks like Cronkite's getting better coverage than Barack Obama. And I realize Obama's coverage has been phenomenal, but Cronkite has been described as a legend, as America's anchor man, as, of course, the most trusted man in America when he hosted the evening news program. And on Sunday, on the Fox News Sunday program, Mara Liasson of NPR referred to Cronkite as being the voice of God.
What do you mean?
Well, this is going way too far, in our opinion. And, you know, AIM is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Accuracy and Media is the oldest media watchdog group in the country. And our founder and longtime AIM Report editor, Reed Irvine, had a number of battles over the years with Walter Cronkite and his successor, by the way, Dan Rather. But in particular with Cronkite, because rather than just being, as he's being portrayed today, an objective newsman, he was the epitome. He symbolized liberal media bias, and he used that bias to the detriment of our nation. Some of the things that are being said about him, look, I don't take issue with his cheerleading for the space program or the fact that he covered the death of President Kennedy with emotion. He captured some of these moments and made them real in the lives of people. He did reach millions and millions of people in the role as anchorman of the CBS Evening News. But that kind of influence and power and authority wasn't all used for the good. And in fact, one of the big battles that Accuracy and Media had with Cronkite over the years was the fact that under his directorship of the CBS Evening News and his role in CBS News in general, this news organization had a pronounced bias against national defense, against national security, and many of the weapon systems that have kept us safe and secure over the years. And we, in particular, looked at this during the Reagan years, when, of course, Ronald Reagan took power after the disastrous years of Jimmy Carter, and Reagan's election mandate was, of course, to rebuild America's defenses. But it was Cronkite and the CBS News team, including Dan Rather, and then Bill Moyers, now with PBS, Public Television, who went after Reagan, attacking him with a vengeance for daring to want to increase spending on national defense. So what I've done in my column called The Terrible Truth About Walter Cronkite up at AIM.org was to go over Cronkite's actual record. It's amazing to us that so many media outlets are highlighting that, oh, he finally became outspoken. He revealed his bias during his coverage of the Vietnam War as if that was a good thing on his part, when it can be argued with evidence that when Cronkite turned against the war by falsely reporting the Tet Offensive in 1968 as an American loss rather than what it was, a loss for the communist enemy, that indeed he turned the tide against the war, creating the conditions for a premature American withdrawal and the loss in vain of 58,000 American lives, and not to mention the millions who died at the hands of the communists after that in Cambodia as well as Vietnam. So this was supposed to be a highlight, something worthwhile in Walter Cronkite's career when he got a major story wrong and helped the communists ultimately complete their conquest of South Vietnam. No, we've been pointing out the truth about Cronkite's record, that he wasn't an objective journalist, that he was liberally biased. We've also called attention to some of the other curious things in his career, such as an interview he gave to a Soviet journalist where he said that he didn't think the Soviet Union was ever a military threat. He gave that interview just a few months before the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. This was part of who Cronkite was. He was certainly a liberal newsman. But his views went beyond liberal to far left, to the point that after he retired, he came even more out of the closet, so to speak, by showing up at places like the left-wing People for the American Way, where he openly denounced President Reagan's military actions in Grenada and against Libya, over Libyan support for terrorism, and Cronkite then would show up at places like the World Federalist Association. This is a world government group where Cronkite got a global governance award, and openly, and in fact, in this appearance and in his own book, he endorsed world government and called for the United States to give up its sovereignty and pass all kinds of UN treaties, ranging from the Law of the Sea Treaty to the Convention on the Rights of the Child to the Women's Rights Treaty. He wanted us to sign up and ratify the International Criminal Court Treaty. I mean, this is who Cronkite was. Now, granted, a lot of this came out during his retirement, but we submit, and this is why I wrote my column, that his bias was apparent when he was anchor of the CBS Evening News. He contributed, as our founder Reed Irvine pointed out, he contributed in a major way to America's defeat in Vietnam. And I repeat, the loss in vain of 58,000 American lives. This is the kind of power and influence that Cronkite had at the time, and he tried to use that influence against President Reagan when Reagan tried to rebuild our defenses. I mean, Cronkite's a guy who later would say that he thought Jimmy Carter was the smartest U.S. president he'd ever met. Jimmy Carter? I mean, that was a disastrous presidency. Look, it's too bad. It's tragic that he died, although he lived a long life. But let's put his career and his record in perspective. He wasn't the voice of God. He was a symbol of liberal media bias. And we have to recognize that. We have to recognize the facts about who this man was and the damage he did.
Well, Cronkite never seemed to be a very objective journalist to me. I mean, I liked his voice, but I never thought he knew everything. Thanks for the report, Cliff.
Michael, great to be with you. Thanks again.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
I told you earlier about the corruption sting in New Jersey and New York. Well, you have to hear some of the details on how Jewish rabbis were involved in this web of thievery. It's horrible. Listen to government attorney Mark McCarron talk about how... Listen to how much money these guys pulled in from the unsuspecting, the worst of all, the kinds of organizations they use to wash this money with. That's right. Charitable organizations. I guess Madoff wasn't enough. They had to pile this on top of everything else. State legislator, several rabbis arrested with a major corruption and international money laundering conspiracy probe, including the sale of kidneys. They paid $10,000 for the kidney and sold it for $160,000. In other words, they bought near and they sold dear. They bought low and they sold high. When confronted by this, one of the rabbis said, "Organs? I know nothing of organs. I don't go to church." Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Queen Elizabeth, only you can fix the mess that the Labor government has gotten themselves into. The fact of the matter is, it's a nightmare what they've done to me. I am innocent. They are guilty. Jackie Smith resigning is not enough. It's only the beginning. I want an apology. I deserve an apology. I am appealing to you, Queen Elizabeth II, who I have always respected. The British Embassy confirms that Michael Savage is still banned. On Sunday morning, a blockbuster story will be released to the press in England that will finally show you who was behind this, who else may be on the list, and why I am an innocent man. Shame on all of you in the media for not trumpeting this case. Obama called cops stupid. His flack says that the cop is not stupid. Obama suffers a major, major defeat in that the Senate has withdrawn the so-called health care reform bill, and it's been shelved until the autumn. Thank God. This will destroy the Obama juggernaut. Make no mistake about it. It has been derailed. His presidency has been derailed. The American people are on to him. By September, they'll be all over him. Shockingly, out of Boston, the Boston Globe has eliminated the police report about the arrest of Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. Why? Because the police report presents such a damning picture of this two-faced, phony professor that they threw it out of the newspaper, but you're going to hear it live on the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Linked on MichaelSavage.com is an article from The American Thinker by a psychotherapist living in Berkeley who has recently become a conservative. After a lifetime of liberalism, she has written an article entitled Are Men Obsolete? And the author, Robin of Berkeley, joins us now. Robin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, first let me say I am so thrilled to be on your show because you are a big reason of how I have woken up. I have always been a very far-left person. I grew up in New York with a dad who thought that liberals were great and conservatives were the devil. So I was brainwashed since childhood. And then I moved about 30 years ago to Berkeley. And so Berkeley is the center of the far left, as we all know. And so then I went very, very left in my politics and also started believing that conservatives were bad and liberals and the left were great. And I just sort of went along in my bubble for all these years. And I woke up last year. And as I say, Michael, you were a big part of it. For me, what had happened, looking back, I realized it's sort of like being in a marriage where I was very happy at first, and then I was disgruntled, but I didn't know why. And what happened for me specifically is that I was a supporter of Hillary, and then I could see how the left really went after her and vilified her. And this may sound odd, but I was shocked. I had no idea that my beloved leftist people would actually be so mean and so horrible and trash her like that. So something woke up for me. And also I was working with a client who was also being just terrorized at her job for the same reason, for supporting Hillary. So I realized that something was wrong on the left and that I had not seen it before. And I didn't know what it was and I was completely confused. I didn't have any friends at all who were conservative. So out of desperation, I started looking around to try to get some answers. And I heard vaguely about talk radio. I just knew that there was something, so I scanned my dial. And, Michael, I found you. And here you were talking about Obama, and you were spot on. And I'd never heard a man like you in my life. And ordinarily, I would just have turned you off. But you were talking about Obama. You were spot on. And you were saying so many other things that, to me, were brilliant. And what I could tell about you right away as a therapist is that you have what I call a creep detector, a radar for creepy people and creepy situations, which is something that I have that not that many people have. I mean, I think we have it in childhood and somehow that gets taken away from us as kids. And you were seeing right away that something was off. But what was so helpful to me is you were filling in the history. You were talking about socialism, and you were talking about philosophy and religion and spirituality, things I was interested in but didn't know that much about. And so you started filling in the information for me that I was missing, and I became glued to your show, listening and getting some more facts, and also going out and meeting some new people and reading. And I had to educate myself. I had to do my own little re-education camp just for myself because I'd always been so far left. I had to learn what has actually gone on with the left that I was completely ignorant about, and that how much of it is steeped in communism and steeped in anger and hate. And the other part of it, Michael, that you pointed out for me is about this idea of feminization. And that's what my article in American Thinker is about. When I first heard you talk about men being feminized, I had no idea what you were talking about. That was the strangest concept. Why should I, as somebody who has always been a feminist and concerned about victims, care about men? But the more I started listening, the more I started understanding what the left has done to men and how that has affected not just men, but all of us, society, and what happens to a society if the men are no longer allowed to be men, if women are no longer allowed to be women. And I started rethinking everything. And that's been my experience for the last year, is rethinking everything. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, and something that I have always believed, a deeply believed, felt belief in anything, it could be abortion, it could be guns, it could be men, it could be absolutely anything, I start questioning everything that I'm believing. And one of them is about men and how feminization of men, as you've been talking about for so long, is not good for men, and it's not good for society, especially given the threats that are out there with North Korea and Iran and China, that we need people to feel strong within themselves.
You use the term hungry ghosts in your explanation of how you were living your life. How do you suggest that we awaken these ghosts in others?
Well, that's a great question, and something I've been asking myself all the time. As a therapist, as somebody myself who has woken up, how can we do it? Because I think that it's absolutely crucial that people start waking up. And, Michael, so much of your show is saying every day, do you know what kind of danger you're all in? Do you know what is going on? I think as a therapist, however, I know that people cannot wake up until they are ready. And that's something that's always frustrating for me as a therapist when I see a client and they're doing things that aren't so good for themselves. And I can be fairly naggy in the effort of really trying to help them and care about them and say, you know, doing this is not good for you, or drinking too much, using drugs, whatever is not good for you. But people have to sometimes, as they say, bottom out before they can actually see the truth. So it's very hard, and I don't think there's any way of snapping our fingers here. But one thing I've been trying to do out here is just to try to create a little bit of doubt in people and anxiety. So I'm probably not the most pleasant person walking around town right now. When I'm sort of going, bebopping around Berkeley, and people say, how are you? And I'll say, oh, I'm okay, just sort of worried about what's going on in the world. And then the person will look at me, and they all of a sudden feel a little doubt or an anxiety. And they'll say, well, what do you mean? And I'll say, well, say health care, that really concerns me. And I'll say why. And, oh, it just seems like there's so much control of us now going on with this more taxing. I'm just worried. And I talk about myself sort of just from this anxious place, and I look very reasonable, and I can see on people's faces that they start getting a little bit nervous, too. So as I say, I'm not the most pleasant person right now to spend a little time with, but it seems to be helpful. And what I also will do is try to gear what I say to the particular person. So I know I have if I have a friend or an acquaintance, and maybe they're very worried about money and taxes, so that I might give them a little information about, oh, it seems like we're going to have to pay more taxes now with this cap and trade. Have you heard about that? And I'll gear it to them that way, just to have them get a little bit nervous and anxious. And I think that it's happening more and more, because what I'm noticing in Berkeley, which is encouraging, is that months ago, people were just so excited and pumped up about Obama. People were talking about him with starry eyes and excitement and listening to him on the radio. And I'm not hearing that anymore. It's very interesting. There's this silence all of a sudden. I don't hear anybody mention him. No one seems to be talking about him. And my guess and my hope is that people are starting to get a little worried, because oftentimes what happens is that people can feel nervous that something is going on, but they can't figure out exactly what it is. It's kind of like one of those situations where a neighbor is arrested for murder, and then they go ahead and they interview other neighbors, and people will say, you know, he seemed nice, but there was just something about him that made me uncomfortable, or there was something about her that just didn't fit. And I think a lot of people are starting to just wonder and question and say, you know, the pieces of the puzzle are just not lining up, but they don't know what it is. And so I think this is a really good time to help people to wake up. But as I say, I think it's going to have to be very slow and patient and meticulous.
Robin of Berkeley, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's been my pleasure, and I want to thank you so much for all that you do for us, and for me in particular, because you have educated me so much. I feel like I have been taking this class for the last year. Every day I tune in, every day I listen to you, and I learn something else, whether it's about religion or philosophy. I love the quotes that you give us from the Bible, from great literature. It's made me much hungrier to learn more about history and religion. I bought my first Bible for, and here I am in my 50s. I'm starting to read that. I'm feel so hungry to learn, and I appreciate so much that you offer me and so many of your listeners the information that so much of us are lacking that we didn't get in the schools, and certainly for me, as somebody who's been a member of the left, I didn't know any of this. So thank you so much for having me on today and for all you do for us.
I'm going to talk about these and other topics even if the rest of the media refuses to. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The cop who arrested the black scholar says he won't apologize, and rightly so. He turns out to be an expert in understanding racial profiling and cautioning other officers how not to engage in this behavior. In fact, it looks to me like the screaming loudmouth who did racial profiling was Henry Louis Gates Jr., the so-called scholar who racially profiled the white cop. And I was not there. Obama was not there, but he took the side of his friend Henry Louis Gates Jr., and I was not there, and I'm going to take the side of the white police officer. Okay, let's go into this with our biases. Let's go into this with our biases exposed. Now, the reason I'm taking the side of this officer is because, number one, I'm aware of the game that guys like Henry Gates Jr. have been playing their whole life. I am a victim of the guys like Henry Gates Jr., second and third rate scholars who got to the top of the heap simply based upon race and screaming race in a crowded nation. So I'm not on his side. That's number one. And for Obama to start talking now about minorities are detained disproportionately to whites, is Obama implying he's a victim too? Is Obama implying he's also a victim? Is he going to continue to play that game? I know that Henry, I know he got very far. So far in his life using that card, the race card, make no mistake about it, we have a president that has played the race card from day one. That's why he's president. But that doesn't mean he's going to get away with it now in this case. I have before you the police report. And the reason I'm going to read it is because the Boston newspapers have dropped it from their website. And the reason they dropped it from the website is because it makes Henry Louis Gates Jr. look like a damn ass. A troublemaking man. And so we'll read that in the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the Sergeant James Crowley of the Cambridge Police, who refuses to apologize. He's the officer who arrested Harvard Prof. Henry Gates. And the fact of the matter is, for the president to say that the cops acted stupidly and then have his flack later on say that the cops didn't act stupidly, when even Bill Cosby is coming out and saying he's shocked at Obama's statement, is pretty much revealing. Fact of the matter is, there should be no criticism of the Cambridge police. We have the full arrest report. You'll listen to it, and you will decide whether it's Gates Jr. who should be apologizing or the police officer who should be apologizing. With regard to my own case, I'm going to insert something right here. I just learned minutes ago that Saturday night in England, actually it'll be Sunday morning, in England and very late Saturday night here, a major London newspaper is going to be releasing a major new blockbuster story. It's going to set the world on its axis. I'm telling you right now what we found in that discovery report about who, what, when, and the English government did this to me and why they singled me out, who else may be on the list, and why O'Reilly, Hannity, and Limbaugh are going to have egg all over their face, in my opinion. It's all going to come out over the weekend. So be very, very pay close attention to michaelsavage.com, because we're going to link the story up the minute it comes out. I don't think I'm going to sleep that night. And you're going to see that I am an innocent man. You're going to see that you should have been on my side. You're going to see this as a liberal issue as much as a conservative issue. You're going to see that the Gordon Brown administration in the office of Jackie Smith was a fascist cell operating within a labor government. You heard me. A fascist cell operating within a labor government. There's good news. The good news is that Obama's socialist juggernaut has been stopped. It's dead in the water. Harry Reid announced today that he does not have the votes in the Senate to go forward, and they are going to hold off on the health care vote in the Senate until the fall. The Obama juggernaut has been stopped. The dreadnought is dead in the water. The engines are not running. It's over. Because the longer we have, we the people have, to read the report, the more graft and corruption we are going to find within it. And consequently, Obama's juggernaut, his dreadnought, the SS Obama, is dead in the water right now. And I think that this is very good for you to know. Very important for you to know that Obama is not infallible. You understand what I just said to you? This guy's been acting as though he's an emperor. He could do no wrong. And he's going to jam this agenda down our throats, whether we like it or not, with a little help from his friend Rahm Emanuel and whatever that guy's name is from New York. That guy with the mustache who I always forget. Because he reminds me. I know who it is. He reminds me of a guy my father knew who raised money for the UJA, who made my flesh crawl, okay? I don't remember him by any other name. And speaking of the UJA, have you heard the story about the rabbis involved in the money laundering in New Jersey? Oh, my God. And Orthodox Jews, no less. Now, this is not to say all Orthodox Jews are involved in rackets, but let me tell you something. We've seen enough of the reverends and preachers marched in over the years with the scamming and the hookers and this and that. Well, guess what? What goes around comes around, and a graft and corruption are not limited to any religion. And there are no religions that are above the law. And to use your religion while scamming for the mafia is a double insult to God. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to hide the guilt underneath your pelt, then you should get a double dose of jail, as far as I'm concerned. If you use your pelt to hide your guilt, then you really got to understand that the people are going to be doubly angry at you. Do you understand this or not? I hope you do, because we're going to talk about that. To buy organs in Israel for $10,000 and sell them for $160,000, can you believe this? Can you believe this? They paid some poor immigrants in Israel $10,000 for an organ, and then they smuggled them into the U.S. with false paperwork saying they were relatives of the recipient, and they charged the recipient $160,000, which, by the way, the recipient probably wasn't paying. I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it was Medicare, Medicaid that was paying for it. I guarantee it was Uncle Schmuck paying for it. As sure as I'm sitting here, it was Uncle Schmuck paying for the $160,000 for the kidney. And they did it in ways that were biblical in proportion of the corruption and greed. So as I say, look, you got to look this in the eye. You say, well, what does this have to do with rabbis? Nothing. It has to do with these rabbis. You understand? It has to do with these rabbis, and I'm not going to go light on them. I'm going to go heavier on them. They're going to get a double dollop of my contempt, a double. It's bad enough when somebody who's not religious does a thing like this. You understand? And if they hide the guilt beneath the pelt, well, let me tell you something. We're going to talk about it. We're all going to yelp, because that's the way it should be. We the people. Okay, God must know they steal the dough. Not all Jews are simple schmoes. They bend the knee to the Almighty, and at night they laugh, tee-hee. That's a little couplet I wrote for myself today. God must know they steal the dough. Not all Jews are simple schmoes. They bend the knee to the Almighty, and at night they laugh, tee-hee. Organ? What organ? I don't know about organ. I don't go in the church, so what do I know about an organ? Organ is in church. We don't know it's... We don't go in church. Church is with organs. Sir, we are talking about kidneys, organs. I told you I don't know from organ. I don't know organ. Organ is in the church. What do you want from me in an organ? I just know that the defense attorney is going to talk about the Holocaust. The defense attorney is going to talk about how they're oppressed. The defense attorney is not going to talk about the case and the corruption. They're going to try and turn the argument. The same way that Obama is a jive artist who tried to already talk about Henry Louis Gates Jr. was picked on and that all minorities are detained disproportionately. That's because they commit more crimes. What do you mean they're detained disproportionately? That's like saying that talking about immigrants is racist because most of them are not white. Oh, well, then I guess we shouldn't talk about illegal immigration because we're liable to be racist. Yeah, sure, I'll stop talking about it. Yeah, I'll stop talking about it. If 100% of the illegal immigrants, or let's say 99.9% of illegal immigrants are not white, and you're talking about them, can you be accused of racism?
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.